How would you like to write your own epitaph? Cemeteries today are boring. You know, modern cemeteries often have rules about the stones. They have to be exactly the same. And all you can put is the name and the dates. No epitaphs. How boring. That's why so many of us love to walk through old cemeteries. Whatever the reasons for such dullness, we and those who follow us have lost something when society does away with epitaphs. Epitaphs are a gift to future generations. Most of us are familiar with variations of this often and somewhat smug epitaph found in multiple cemeteries around the world. As you are now, so once was I. As I am now, so shall you be. Remember this and follow me. To which someone in a cemetery in Waynesville, North Carolina, scribbled on the tombstone, "To follow you, I am not content. How do I know which way you went?" And then there's that wonderful epitaph in Hollywood at the grave of Mel Blanc. If that name doesn't ring a bell to you, Mel Blanc was the voice of Porky Pig. And I bet you can imagine what his epitaph says. That's all, folks. And for those of you who remember Jackie Gleason, you know what his epitaph says? "And away we go." In Uniontown, Pennsylvania, is the epitaph of a man named Jonathan Blake. "Here lies the body of Jonathan Blake, stepped on the gas instead of the brake." Boot Hill in Tombstone, Arizona, has some dillies. "Here lies Lester Moore, four slugs from a .44, no less, no more." Okay, one more. This one from Albany, New York, I had to insert it. "Harry Edsel Smith, born 1903, died 1942. Looked up the elevator shaft to see if the car was on the way down. It was." You can't make this stuff up. It's priceless, like the gravestone of the hypochondriac in Georgia that said, "I told you I was sick." Well, there is this extraordinary epitaph in the story of the death of Moses. It was written by someone who looked at the book of Deuteronomy and decided to put a little postscript to it. He was struck by the fact that the shining star of Israel's history had no monument, no epitaph, not even a gravesite for anyone to visit. No one even knew where he was buried. So in a postscript to the book of Deuteronomy, some unknown author gave Moses an extraordinary epitaph. "Never since has there arisen a prophet in Israel like Moses." Now that's quite an epitaph. Who among us would not like to have a similar epitaph? "Never since has there arisen a singer in New England like Sheila. Never since has there arisen a historian in New England like Stan. Never since has there arisen a soccer mom like anybody. Never since has there arisen a golfer in New England like you put your name in. You know, we could let our imaginations drift freely around as we think about the never since kind of epitaphs. But Moses was assigned this spectacular epitaph. There appears to be a wistfulness in this epitaph. After all, the very people who revered him when he died were the ones who gave him hell while he was living. And finally, when they reached the very edge of the promised land, Moses climbs up to the top of Mount Pisgah. And he looks out over this vast land, the land of his dreams. Ah, the land of his dreams, the place that they were traveling toward for 40 difficult years in the desert, the place for which he had been yearning all these years, the place toward which he had been moving for a lifetime, and now at long last he's standing there on the top of Mount Pisgah, and the biblical text says almost pathetically, "Then Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab." The fulfillment of a lifetime dream would be left to someone else. The unspoken message of this story is that many great dreams are greater than one lifetime can fulfill. In fact, the great dreams are constructed on a scale larger than one lifetime. When we hear a resonant baritone voice singing a spiritual like deep river, "My home is over Jordan," a song inspired by this very story that we heard this morning, we imagine all the generations of slaves who dreamed of freedom, worked for freedom, prayed for freedom, that they would never get there. That was left for their children and grandchildren while they were buried often in unmarked graves. It is, of course, very good to experience the fruits of our labor and to know the fulfillment of dreams come true. It's a good thing. But it's also true that some dreams are greater than the scope of our lifetime. God knows we need those mega dreams, those dreams that are bigger than one lifetime can fulfill. We all need a place that holds up the standard of great dreams. Dreams like the hope of a beloved community. The dreams of prophets who dreamed of a time when justice would roll down like waters and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. Dreams of Jesus when he spoke of the meek and the merciful and the pure in heart and the peacemakers and the salt of the earth. We need a place where we can grapple with difficult dreams. Dreams like loving our enemies. And who is our neighbor? And praying for those who persecute us. We need a community where the dream of love becomes flesh and blood among us. Church is that place. Church holds up dreams greater than one life can fulfill. Providence was founded on a dream that must have seemed oh so fragile at the time. A dream of soul liberty, of the separation of church and state. In 1638, who could have imagined that an entire nation would adopt that dream? That dream was bigger than the lifetime of Roger Williams. When we gather as a church, we are working together to fulfill a dream that is bigger than any one of us, bigger than any one congregation, bigger than one lifetime can possibly fulfill. We constantly work together on that dream. We teach it to our children. We pass on to the next generation that gleam in the eye, that hope for a better world, that way of living that Jesus taught us. Being faithful to that mega dream takes a lifetime and more. Why anyone would ever imagine that working for that great mega dream is not worth our greatest investment, our deepest commitment, and our most fervent prayers is beyond me. Society goes through trends when church is more or less important. We endure periods when scandal rocks the church, when attendance rises or falls, and the quality of church program varies from age to age. But the dream remains. It is as real today as it was in the golden glow of yesteryear when, after World War II, this church, like most churches who are Protestant, were filled to the gills. When we announce today that the theme of this year's stewardship campaign is Choices That Matter, we were thinking not just of political choices. We will, I hope, make choices and vote on election day, all of us. Those are important choices, but there is also our choice to invest in the church's dream. A dream greater than the budgetary needs for 1 year. Sure, a church budget pays for the heat. It pays the salaries of the staff members. It pays all the bills an institution like ours accumulates in order to function. And it pays out generous checks to ministries in this community and around the world to keep that larger dream alive. But the function of a church budget is not so much to keep the lights on in the building as it is to keep the dream alive in our hearts. That dream is greater than all our bills. That dream is the dream that we fund, and it calls for absolute faithfulness from every one of us. So Moses died and is buried somewhere around Mount Pisgah. Joshua steps into his place. And he in turn eventually dies and is buried. New circumstances require new leaders. Generation after generation does its part to pass on the legacy of that dream. Yet through all these generations, the one dream inspired by the divine spirit remains constant. Some of you are familiar with a mountain in the Great Smoky Mountain National Park that is called Mount Pisgah. You can get to it on the road that veers off the Blue Ridge Parkway, not far from Asheville. It is the highest point in the Great Smoky Mountain Range, although the summit of Mount Mitchell, not far away, in the Black Mountain Range is 38 feet higher than the summit of Mount Pisgah. At the very top of Mount Pisgah is Clingman's Dome, named for Thomas Lanier Clingman, a Confederate general who was described as, and I'm quoting, an intrepid man of most arrogant and aggressive behavior, greatest self-confidence, unlimited assurance, prodigious conceit, stupendous aspiration, immense dreams, more than common ability, no considerable attainment or culture, great boastfulness, and much curiosity. Now, how's that for an epigram? He owned 300 acres at the top of Mount Pisgah from the 1830s until shortly before his death in 1897, when he sold this land to George W. Vanderbilt, the grandson of Cornelius Vanderbilt, who built the famous Biltmore House in Asheville. If you park your car and walk up to the observation tower at the top of Clingman's Dome on Mount Pisgah, you can understand why it was named Mount Pisgah. There is a 360-degree view. And on a clear day, which admittedly is not all that often these days in the Great Smoky Mountain National Park, but on a clear day, you can see up to 100 miles of the most beautiful land in America. On a good, clear day, this church is our Mount Pisgah. This is it. When we worship together, we are casting our eyes over a dream of a world that is just and peaceful, a world in which wars are no more and hatred is vanquished, a world in which there is enough for everyone, a world in which compassion prevails. Our generation carries this dream on its shoulders. And then we will pass it on to the next generation. That dream sustains us. It inspires us. It compels us. And like Moses, there will come a day when we will say to those we love, "This is a dream that I now turn over to you, for your generation, but you can be sure that you are not alone." May it be said that this generation carried that dream valiantly. May it be said of this generation that we were faithful to that dream, faithful to the hope, and faithful to the reality of living that dream in the community of faith known as the First Baptist Church in America.